listen to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 143 of Rogue Startups. Mr. Craig, how are you doing this fine afternoon?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. We're coming into the home stretch of summer vacation here, and it's been a lot of fun this summer, but I think everyone is quite ready for kind of the normalcy of routine of school calendars and schedules and everything again, as my kids walk in as we're recording. You were laughing at me. I know.
I was totally laughing with you because I'm like, I have been in that exact same position right there. Only I hit mute and then just, you know, laid into my kids like, I'm in the middle of this right now. I can't do that.
I mean, it's, well, first of all, it's 9:45. Like, they should be asleep.
Yes.
But I mean, that's just like, that's exactly what I was going to talk about. It's just that, like, everyone is ready for some normalcy. I mean, we had the last week. The kids were in swim lessons every morning at 8:30 in the morning. So we were like up and at them, and the kids were trying to go to bed by like 9 o'clock at night. And so that was cool. And so I had like kind of a normal day because they were all whooped after being in swim practice every morning and getting up early and all this kind of stuff. But this week is more of just like run free summer vacation, and nobody gives a shit about schedules or, you know, my kind of priority to try and work or anything like that. So it's a little difficult. I went to a co-working space today, which was really awesome, and I'm probably going to go back to it on a regular basis, you know, once they get back in school. This place offers like packages of like 5 or 10 days a month, which is cool. So you can do like every day, it's like $400 a month, or you can buy like packages where it's about like $10 a day, $15 a day. So I'm probably going to do that here once the kids go back to school, because it really is like hyper focused work when I'm there.
Yeah, I'm having kind of a love hate relationship with working at home these days, because I feel like when I go somewhere else, that I kind of have to be productive. Like, I just went and did all of this effort to get over there, and I bought a coffee because I'm, you know, sitting hanging out in this coffee shop, or I'm sitting in the library, and I'm like, all right, I did all of that. Now I have to make up for the fact that I just, you know, I'm not at home and I don't have the usual time that I could just do this whenever.
Yeah.
I made the time to come and go do it now. So now I feel like I gotta get into it. And the times that I've done that, it's been really good. I haven't done as much of it because there's more effort involved. And so, you know, there's part of me that's like, you know, I get up every morning, I shower, I get dressed, and now our kids are back in school too. So I'm like driving them to school in the morning. So we're out the door at 7 a.m. because my kids have to be driven, you know, across the suburbs here to go to the STEM school. Mm. And you know, by the time I get back, it's like 8 o'clock. I eat my breakfast, and then I'm pretty much starting to work by 8:30. So it's a nice routine. It works out pretty well. When the kids get home at like 3:45, you know, I've had a pretty quiet day overall. But you know, when they get home, like all fucking hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
They've held it together all day, so now they want to be noisy. Now they want to run around. Now they want to play with each other. Now they want to watch TV. So it's like. Like yesterday, I didn't realize it, but, you know, I've got my shitty internet here. And at some point, like around 4:30, I'm like, why the hell is it taking so long to do stuff? And then I realized they were like streaming things like upstairs watching and like jacking up with my work here. And I'm like, oh, forgot. You know, before I could say other things like, okay, you can't have media before 3. And then, you know, it just wasn't a problem. But then when they got home, now I'm seeing these things and – yeah, I totally hear you on the lack of schedule. But, you know, be careful what you wish for, because last week we got all that schedule and that structure. But there's that transition time when they're struggling to deal with their slightly earlier bedtimes or their slightly
Oh,
rigid
yeah.
bedtimes. And yeah, now all of a sudden they're like, oh, wait a minute. I had all this freedom before. Now I don't have that freedom. That sucks. And I'm
Yeah,
just going to
no.
wake up and I'm going to come over and tell you about it. And I'm not going to bed. And I'm like,
Yeah,
go to bed, kid. I love you, but I need you in bed now.
no, for sure. And my son, our youngest, is starting like the equivalent of kindergarten, so like real school. And so like
Yes.
he'll have homework. Yeah, it's not really homework. You know how it is, like you have to kind of repeat the lessons they had in class that day. And so we just like, yeah, there's a lot of changes coming on the personal front. So I feel like even like, and this is kind of, I don't know, it's sad or good or whatever, but like if I could have one really good day of work every week, then the rest of the time I could get in at home would be fine. You know? So that's kind of how I look at it. It's like if I get the 5 pass per month thing at this co-working space, and I can go once a week, give or take, and get 6 or 8 really good hours of work, that would be great because it's there. I've paid, like you said, I've paid for it. I've driven all the way, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So I'm going to try it. I'm going to experiment with it and do like 4 weeks in a row and see how it goes. And if I feel like I'm getting a lot more done, then I'll say to myself and to my wife, I can say, this is worth it. You know, this is worth the money I'm spending on this and the time and, you know, taking the one car we have away for the whole day and everything. So we'll see, but that's on my horizon. I really liked it today. It was really good internet, a really cool, like modern place, like all glass and everything. It was really cool. Kind of makes me feel good about working too. You know, not in my little extra bedroom here. Like I'm in a co-working space and that's cool and I have a startup and all this kind of
Right.
stuff. So I don't know. That's part of it probably. That's legit, I think.
I don't even think it's like the space. So, you know, here's my theory about just changing things up every now and then. Just the fact that you've changed it makes you behave a little bit differently or behave a little more focused, because I guess it throws you out of your routine. Like now I feel like my routine is coming into my home office here. But the times that we were doing the floor work this summer and I got kicked out to the co-working space, that made me more focused because it was different. Not because the co-working space was better. It was actually a noisy cafe. And by no means was I having a better time focusing there. It was just different. So I could use the novelty as a way to kind of get stuff done. And that was kind of nice. But, you know, all novelty wears off after a while. So, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months after doing this co-working thing, you'll be like, yeah, you know, I'm not as productive as I used to be. That's my theory.
Totally,
I don't
yeah.
know.
No, that's
So,
totally reasonable. Yeah.
yeah, so we should check that out. We're going to check back in. So mark your calendars, listeners. Today is Tuesday, August 21st. So in 3 months, right around Thanksgiving, we're going to check back in with Craig and find out, is this co-working experiment working or not? So.
That will be the end of my productivity because the ski slopes open right after Thanksgiving here. So it'll be December to April, I'll be worthless. Yep.
Oh, very nice, very nice.
Yep.
Oh, speaking of skiing, I am hearing rumblings of Big Snow TinyConf East is starting to get their list warmed up and things sent out. So I need to do the same thing with West. And I think in the spirit of what you started last year with Europe and what we kind of did a little bit with West and what East is now doing, we're going to make this an invite-only event.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like it.
And yeah, and you know, and by invite only, I don't mean like exclusive to people that I know. No, that's certainly not been what Big Snow has been traditionally. But I'm thinking that, you know, obviously having vetted people that you know have the right kind of business. And by right, I mean, is it an online web-based business as opposed to, say, a consulting agency or this enterprisey thing over here? Like, is it a good fit with everybody else so that you're getting a lot out of it and that you're able to contribute a lot as well? Because when we've had those mismatches, that's when it's been kind of like, you know, nails on a chalkboard integration, interaction kind of stuff there. So
Yeah.
I think to avoid that, that's why you did the interview thing there. So we'll start with throwing it out to past attendees, of course, which I've always done, and we'll open that up to a certain number of slots. But then after that, for people that want to go and that I don't know personally, then I'm going to have to set up, you know, I already had this already for last year, but it's basically going to be kind of like a little mini interview. Like, tell me about your business. Tell me about yourself. What's your background and that kind of stuff. And I think we can get some really cool people that way. But, you know, if you don't have something there, it's going to be hard to get the right mix of people. And I do want the right mix of people, because last year we had a great mix of people and it was just amazing. It was, you know, it becomes a magical thing. Like, I think the first year was really good because we just by default had the right mix of people. And then last year was really good, had the right mix of people. In between, it was kind of a mixed bag. So yeah, I think that's what I'm shooting for.
I like it. I like it. You know, I think back, and I think part of the nexus of doing the application we did in our first year of Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe was Chris Yates and Rhodium. So, like, before you can go to Rhodium Weekend, you fill out an application and have a call with him. And it's like, I think for us, Dave, we had him on the podcast before you and I applied to go to the conference, so it was like a formality. But I think it's just that like, this is a formality. But to everyone else, you know, you have to kind of show up with your A game, and that this is like real conference and we don't have any jokers around here or anything like that. And so, yeah, I think that you do want a bunch of different – it's tough. You want a bunch of different types of people and businesses that are kind of relatable, I'll say, not similar, but relatable, to where everybody kind of gets something out of everyone else there, because that's really where it's magic.
Yeah. And I absolutely want to have people that are serious about it. And I think the application process kind of tells me who's serious and who's not. Like, if you're willing to step up and fill out the application, like, you're kind of excited to go. You know, I had some people last year that were telling me how excited they were, and I went out of my way to let them know, hey, you know, this is happening. Let's go. Let's sign up now. And then they're like, oh, well, you know, I've, you know, excuse.
Right, my grandmother.
Weasley statement, blah,
right,
blah, blah.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, you just told me a couple of months ago how much you really wanted to do this thing. Here it is. It's ready to go right now. All you got to do is plunk down some cash, you know. And I understand if you can't afford it, that's fine. But, you know, this was not a can't afford it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you got to be committed to it. And there's definitely people like, as soon as I open up the gates, they're like, boom, you know, drop down that credit card and they're ready. they don't mess around.
Yeah.
So you find people like that, find people that are serious and willing to do it and ready to go. And there were people that I saw some stuff for that just didn't move fast enough. Like, I was really excited for a couple of founders. I'm not going to divulge their personal information here over the podcast, but I was kind of excited to, like, I saw their application and their business type and all of this stuff, and I'm like, this looks great. I would love to have this person here. And then they didn't really follow up.
Mm, yeah.
So I'm like, well, I mean, okay. You know, maybe you didn't get the emails, or maybe your priorities changed, or I don't know what it is. But, yeah, it's hard. It's hard. So I think by extending some personal invitations, you get some serious people that are there. You get people that you know are going to be a good mix, and, you know, then you try to – make it so that you don't just have a bunch of the same kind of people there. That's not very helpful. You want some new blood every year. So
yeah. So I started chatting with a few people that I know had said, hey, if you're doing it again this year, I definitely want to come. Started chatting with them like on Twitter and stuff in the last couple of weeks. And I really have to, this expression is shit or get off the pot at this point about whether we're going to do Big Snow Tiny Cup Europe next year. I really would like to do it. And I just put in my calendar for tomorrow a slot to find a place and set a date and start talking to these people. Because I really do want to do it, because I'll go to a conference, I'll go to SASDOC in October in Dublin. And then my next conference is not going to be until MicroConf Vegas in April. So Dave, I'm coming. I got it on my calendar. I'm coming. But it does mean I need to and want to do something else in the winter. And so Big Snow Tiny Conf Europe is a fantastic thing. My buddy Carlos Hernandez does this Tropical SaaS conference, which is very similar. He lives on the Canary Islands down off the coast of Africa. And so tropicalsaas.com, I think, is a similar kind of thing. And he does it in November. So if anybody else is looking for something kind of similar in a very tropical, wonderful location. Carlos is doing it again this year. I think they had like 10 people last year, but I need to pick his brain about how he kind of picked and vetted and organized things, because it was a similar kind of thing that we're putting together. But yeah, so I guess for listeners in Europe or want to come to Europe, stay tuned. Next week, I will have a date and a place picked out, and so I hope we can make it happen this year. I was bummed that we didn't last year, but yeah, stay tuned.
Right on, right on. So, what else is going on? What are Sales Camp and Podcast Motor and Castos and all those doing?
So yeah, I get the only really, well, I guess two things. One, got some feedback from a listener from our last episode talking about freemium. So Benjamin Eberle hit us up on Twitter and was asking, like, for Sales Camp, does it make sense instead of freemium or free trial to say, like, use it as long as you want to until you get value from it? Which is something I definitely toyed around with in the past. Basically, was like, it's free until you get a conversion or a referral sale or something like that. So I think technically it's a little more work to code that into, the app than like a 30-day free trial. But we've been kind of redoing our onboarding process. I think it's where a fair amount of people are getting stuck, is like they sign up for a free trial and then they're like, what is this? How do I get like this installed to make it work on my site? So it really is very simple at this point for Sales Camp to work on your site, and we just need to kind of relay that easier and better in the onboarding process. So I've been kind of redoing the onboarding process in the app this week. And then we probably are going to try a 30-day free trial for a while, and then we're probably going to try a free until you get value from it kind of model, which I think is not terribly difficult from a technical standpoint. But yeah, so that's what we're looking at with Sales Camp. And then with Castos, I think the only other kind of big news there is we are hiring and we are looking for a team member. So if anybody is in the support space or would like to be in the support space, we are looking for, we're calling this a customer success engineer. And we're calling it that because it is a couple of things. It is customer success. And my definition of that is this person plays offense and defense. So they answer support tickets, defense. And they also play offense, like making the product better, interacting with me as kind of like the product person as to like what feedback is coming from the customers and how we can improve things like onboarding and setup and documentation, all this kind of stuff. And I would like this person to be kind of involved in the podcasting community. So the goal of this person is to kind of be the more of the public face of what we're doing, because that's definitely something that I'm doing a lot of right now. And I think a really good person who can come in and kind of be the interaction with our customers would be a really good hire for us. And I hope it would be a good fit for somebody else who could come in and wants to be part of the team. So if anybody is interested and know or knows somebody who's interested, hit me up on Twitter or send us a message, hello@castos.com. We are looking for somebody part-time right now, so like 15 or 20 hours a week. And absolutely want and hope that this turns into a full-time position by the end of the year. So that's
Nice.
yeah, I mean, it's a super important thing because right now I'm spending a shit ton of time on support, and I hope I have better things to do. But it's a big deal, and it's really, I mean, it's really a hard hire to find someone who can take all of the load of support off. And unfortunately, we've tried it a couple of times and haven't found the right person yet. So hopefully we find the right person here soon. If anybody knows somebody, we'd love to chat. Yeah.
That right person makes a big difference. I mean, having support largely off my plate, except for like tier three kind of issues, makes a huge difference on just about everything I end up doing these days. Like right now, if I didn't have Bobby, I would be screwed.
Yeah, no.
I've got so little bandwidth right now, and like last week, this past week, we had back to school nights every night, and my freelance client's been like super intense on this one piece of the project. So I've been spending a disproportionate amount of time with them, and I've been trying to do nights and weekends. That sounds familiar, right? and my nights and a good chunk of my weekend for the last week have all been crap. So if I had to like do WordPress stuff on top of that, I would be getting zero done as opposed to little.
And it's tough. I mean, it's, as you know, I mean, Bobby is an investment, and you pay, you know, I'm looking at paying at least $1,000 a month for somebody. And I mean, Castosa's growing and all this kind of stuff, and it's profitable and all this, but like to put $1,000 a month into support is a big deal if they don't take care of a lot of stuff. You know, that's the thing I think we've run into. We've had some people in the position, and they've just not taken the load off my plate. And so we're really looking for a long-term person who can come in, learn the ropes. The knowledge transfer is obviously really difficult because it's kind of a complicated app and setup and WordPress integration and stuff. But yeah, but it is something that can grow with the right person. So I'm excited to find the right person and hope that it happens soon.
Cool.
So I was chatting with former guest and friend of the show, Ed Freifogel, this week on Twitter, and we were chatting a bit about zombie customers. Dun dun dun.
Brains.
But so no, I think this would really be a better discussion for something like a round table or a panel at something like MicroConf. But Dave, we'll attempt to flail our way through this. But so kind of the premise or whatever the definition of a zombie customer is somebody who's paying you money but is inactive in your app, and definitely is not getting value from that. And so the question is really like, how do you identify these people? What do you do with them in terms of re-engaging them? And then I think a little bit of I don't know, philosophical question is like, should you be charging them? We'll talk about maybe those three things as far as kind of zombie customers.
Yeah, and let me just say that I want to say that I hate you for
Yeah.
making me do this episode because if I didn't have enough to be anxious about already, when you proposed this topic, I had to go in and look at my customers and find out what zombies I actually have present. And the number was far greater than I wanted it to be. Ideally, you want this number to be zero. And mine is not zero. In fact, it's a percentage that I would care not to admit, but I will say it's double digits.
Yeah.
And it is painful to see that number in your face and realize that here's a bunch of people that are, you know, giving you their credit card and you're charging it, and they're not getting out of the platform what you want them to get out of it. So let's address your first point here. The philosophical part, I wanted to jump right into that, but I don't think this is the right time to do that. So what was your first question again? We talked about the definition of zombie customers, and then the second one was.
Yeah, I mean, I think how you identify them, right? I mean, so like, how do you say,
Oh, yeah.
you know, how do you say, okay, this person is not active, right? And that's kind of the whatever the definition is. A zombie customer is very inactive.
Very, very inactive. Yeah. So for me, we actually have some custom engagement stuff that we built into Recapture. And I can tell like how many times they've logged in, when they've logged in, where they've gone around in the app and what they've done. It's very unsophisticated, but it does give me some general idea. And then I can also look at other things like which features do they have turned on or turned off, which is something that you wouldn't necessarily get from another engagement platform because this is all very Recapture specific. And then there's things like, have they recovered revenue? Do they have certain campaigns turned on? You know, so I can slice and dice, and I've got this very ugly looking page I would never show anybody except my developer. All these drop downs that I can flip and then say, all right, who are the customers that do this? And then I can export that as a CSV if I want to. And then I have occasionally used that to tag people in Drip and say that they're this.
Yeah.
What, you know, maybe these are all my Magento customers. Here are all my Shopify customers. Here's the people that are all using campaigns like abandoned cart campaigns or email collectors or whatever. Anyway, so I've got all that stuff and I can slice and dice in there. And for me, it's easy to look because all I have to do is say, who's it paying me and not recovering revenue? because if you're not recovering revenue, you're pretty much not using my product. Like, mm-hmm. there's probably something wrong with that. And I can also look to see, is their store actually showing any revenue? Because the two of those are correlated. Like, I have a bunch of customers that have signed up for the platform, and they're not making money in their store. So, of course, I can recover 100% of zero, and that's still zero. So they get no value out of the platform because there's just nothing for me to get value for them. And I can identify who those customers are. But what's interesting is if somebody's paying you, chances are they were getting that value, because I don't get people that sign up that are, you know, making nothing and getting nothing and saying, hey, Dave, I really want to give you $50 a month. Just out of the goodness of my heart, that just never happens.
Because you're such a good guy. Yep.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely. If that ever happens, let me tell you, I will turn that into a business model and write a whole book about it. But so far, we're talking a whole lot of jack shit on that one.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, when somebody was paying you and then all of a sudden you're seeing like zero revenue come through either on recovery or in their store, you know something's amiss. Mm-hmm. So when you pointed this out and I went through the exercise, I looked and I was like, oh, there's bunch of people there that are basically waiting to churn.
Yeah.
Because that's what a zombie customer is. It's a churn candidate. It's a pre-churn candidate. And that sucks. That really sucks. So how do you end up identifying them?
Yeah. So we, I think we have, we talked about in our last episode, I think we have a little bit different setup in ProfitWell than you do because we have like a credit card required up front and everything. But anyway, so we get the engagement data from ProfitWell. And I don't know. I don't know how to compare our number to anyone else's. I think it sucks. But I attribute that, and I kind of give myself solace a little bit, in that you, if you're running your podcast from your WordPress site, you never really need to go to castos.com. So you sign up, you integrate your API key with your WordPress site, and you do everything from WordPress. So I kind of say, yeah, you know, 80%+ of our customers use WordPress and our API. They don't need to come to castos.com for much. So I kind of tell myself that to make myself sleep better and drink less. But I do think about engagement a lot. And I think like that's where it really comes in, is like we don't have any kind of like triggers or tags or metrics around this that like go into drip or intercom or anything. But ideally, that's what we should be doing, is saying like, okay, we have a 2-week trial. In those 2 weeks, I take that back. We do have a trigger that says, did they connect their API key? So we have that. We don't really have did they publish their first episode, or like did they submit their podcast to iTunes, because we kind of can know that. And that would, like, for us, that would really be like what someone being activated would be, because from then it would only be, the only chance for churn would be they activated, they tried it, they got whatever 10 episodes in and they figured, wow, this is a lot of work, I don't want to do this, and they churn. But if we get them activated, at least that's like the most we have control over. So, we do a bad job of this, admittedly. I don't know. We do a decent job of this, I guess. But, I think and this is like part of why, Dave, I find more and more like really scaling a business is really hard, because you have to get past the like doing the manual labor stuff to like systematizing and getting technology in place to enable you to be able to tell when somebody is activated. Because right now it's just like, I answer a lot of tickets in intercom and help people get activated, but it should be a lot more automated than this. And I think that's probably like kind of what Ed was getting at, is like, how do you systematize and put technology in place to help people get onboarded and successful and get that aha moment as quickly and as often as you can, so that you don't have to do a whole bunch of extra work for every customer.
Right. And that's part of what I built into the onboarding process when I went around and did the revamp on that. So I put in a series of campaigns that if they didn't get through certain steps, I would have a series of emails. Like, the biggest hurdle it seemed like I was dealing with my Magento customers was getting them to install and activate the extension.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times they'd download it and then they would just seem to drop off. And I was like, oh, that's not good. So that's when I went in and put these sequences in. And then I noticed that the Magento folks had a better time of getting to that stage because I would add in things like, hey, here's the documentation. Hey, are you having any problems? Hit reply. I'll be happy to help. Or pop little sessions up in intercom and then I would get chat requests or whatever. So it definitely got better. It never got perfect, of course. I mean, there are always people that sometimes they just don't want to keep going. They see something and they're like, yeah, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And you never know what that is. And I have to admit, that's one of the frustrating things about watching customers drop off, especially on onboarding, is that you don't always know why they're leaving. And you would really like to know exactly why they're leaving. And they won't tell you. And that's just the way that it is. So you try to get as much information as you can and you work with that and try to do better. But it's definitely not a perfect process and it is frustrating as hell sometimes for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So we built some content around this because we saw kind of early on, like, one, we get a lot of the same questions. And then two, people being successful means like enabling them with knowledge a little bit. You know, for us, that's like, how do you podcast? And so we put together this podcasting guide, and it's like this huge 20 video lessons about everything about how to podcast. So it's like castos.com/guide. And it's both really helped like with customer support, basically a lot of how do I do this questions is, you know, hey, go check out the guide and there's videos there that tell you everything that you need to know. And it's like an SEO thing, but like I think it helps. I hope the goal is that it helps people get onboarded easier and quicker and by themselves. And I think like when I go through apps that do a really good job of this, it's all about education because they say, okay, you do this and then you push this button and then you do this and then there's a pop-up over there. And like, there's no possible way you could screw it up, you know? I think that's the goal. But for us, that's the goal is like to get to that kind of point. We're definitely not there, but that's kind of the goal, I think.
Yeah. And looking at my stuff, you know, I was thinking about this while you were chatting earlier that, you know, there's a series of steps that have to be accomplished in order for somebody to reach the aha moment. But there's definitely like an ongoing set of steps. Like if they stop recovering revenue, they've already passed the aha moment. But if they sort of shut that off or if it starts tapering off, that's kind of a red flag and a warning sign. And I don't have something right now that really identifies that. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking that, you know, you could have something like what Drip has for a lead score, which decays over time. Well, you could have like a success score for a customer that also decays over time. So if they get to the revenue point, you know, that maximizes their score. And then if they're continuing to recover revenue, then that keeps the score where it's at. If they increase, maybe you increase the score. If it decreases, then you decrease. And if it goes to zero, then their score goes to zero. And then there should be like some report that says, hey, the following customers have gone to, you know, have decreased by this amount of percent or have gone to zero in this time.
Mm-hmm. And then put them into a campaign to say, you know, hey, do you need help with this? Or we've noticed, you know.
Right, right. I mean, you could definitely, yeah, you have to identify what that is and then, you know, code that into the app somehow. And then once you've done that, you could detect that in a cron job or something and then basically tag those customers in Drip, which would drop them into a campaign. And then if they, you know, respond or if they do something that changes that score, then you have to pull them out of that campaign. So that's all codable for sure. But something like that would be a great way to help, you know, avoid customers ending up in a zombie state because that just sucks. I mean, I'm looking at the MRR that I have basically at risk at this point, and it's non-trivial. You know, it's not like four figures or anything like that, but it's still scary to see that I'm basically looking at a churn bomb right there.
Churn bomb.
Now, I don't know about you, but one thing that I could do, and I don't know that this is something that everybody could do, because the reasons for somebody stopping using your product aren't necessarily the same ones that they might stop using mine. So the one thing that I started digging into with a tool that I've been using lately is to try to figure out what technologies are on various websites. And I can tell when somebody has basically replatformed. So if they've switched from Magento to Shopify or Magento to BigCommerce or WooCommerce or whatever, I can see that on the site. It'll tell me when they started and stopped using particular technologies. And that's super cool. And it also kind of gives me insight. So I looked at all the zombie customers. And of the zombie customers, one of the sites was dead. So it looks like they shut the store down. And then of the other sites, two of them had replatformed to Shopify and switched to a competitor. And several of them had switched to either BigCommerce or Woo. And they were, I don't support those platforms, so obviously they can't take me with them. But, the ones that switched to Shopify and didn't use me, those are the ones I kind of want to reach out to and say, so let's talk for a second. You were using this before, and now you're using this now. Why'd you switch? Of course, I don't know that I can breach the conversation exactly like that because they're going to be like, whoa, Dave, you're creepy as fuck. What happened there? How do you know all this about me? Go away, stalker. But I'm going to try to find a way to broach that topic in a way that gives me hopefully a little bit of feedback to know, did they switch on Shopify because this solution works better, because it was less expensive, because it does more? You're like, what is it that I'm missing here? What's the what's the component of this that I need to be aware of? Because I'm not getting that feedback on the Shopify platform right now. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, when we, it's not exactly kind of the same, but when we have someone cancel, we definitely in the cancellation message say, yep, we'll cancel your account. As the founder of the company, what was it about Castos that wasn't fitting your needs? And we get, 20% of the people reply and say, hey, yeah, I'm just not podcasting anymore, or Anchor is free. Oh my God. Okay, that's great. Go to Anchor. That's fine.
Have fun.
Yeah, have fun. Let me know. Yeah, I mean, I think getting that feedback is getting honest feedback in that situation is tough. Some people give it to you, and then I wonder like how biased the feedback that you get then is, because they're
Yeah,
probably being nice.
I'm always so worried. Like, I would actually rather just have them say, dude, your product's too fucking expensive. Just lay it down straight. But I think people are just so afraid they're going to hurt your feelings that they're like, oh, well, we're switching to, yeah. And they just want to crawl away and die or something. I don't know. I've put people into churn campaigns. I've contacted them personally. I just keep reaching out and they don't reply. So I don't know if it's a, I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'm mad at you. I'm ashamed that I had this great relationship with you and now I don't. And so I don't want to say that. Like, I don't know what it is, but you get ghosted by customers all the time. And, in all fairness, I have ghosted providers myself. Like, they send me things and I'm like, eh, I just don't care enough to respond. So maybe that's just where they're at with me too. Like, you don't, that's a sad place to be, but if they're not that passionate about your product, that's a bad place to be.
So, Dave, do you feel guilty taking people's money who are not getting value from your product?
Oh, do I feel guilty? This is the question I hate you for.
I'll be
So,
happy to start if you'd like. That's fine.
no, I will give you an answer. I'll give you an answer. So, I feel bad that they've suddenly stopped getting value, and I don't understand why. I don't know that I feel guilty about them paying me for using the platform because, in some sense, each of us is responsible for our own actions. And if you're going to replatform and you don't want to use me anymore, it kind of feels like that's your job to cancel me when you're done and move over to the other thing. And sometimes people like an overlap period. So maybe they're not sure that their new solution is going to work and they want some confidence to pull back. I mean, I've talked to a couple people that have done replatforming and they wanted to have two parallel accounts running because if you've replatformed, you can't really reuse the cart data. It gets weird when you switch from Magento 1 or 2 or to Shopify. It just doesn't quite line up and the numbering is wrong and sometimes the keys are different and just all kinds of crazy stuff happens. So you can end up with some really wonky data. And, they wanted to run those in parallel and they did this for a long period of time. And, I was like, all right, yeah, we can do this, no problem. So for somebody who's like still paying for a service and they, aren't technically using it, maybe that's where they're at. So should I be feeling guilty about that? Well, no, because they're specifically keeping us there as a security blanket, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So I don't really know the reasons why. Maybe they're lazy. Maybe they just don't care. Maybe that $49 a month doesn't matter that much to them, and they're like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. I it's hard for me to feel guilty about it because it wasn't my choice. It makes me feel bad. I don't want to, you know, sound like an unethical schmuck here that enjoys taking people's money for nothing. It really upsets me that somebody is not getting the value out of the platform and they're paying for it. Like, I want them to get value out of it. I want them to want to use the service. And when they're not, you know, now I've got this list of customers. I need to proactively reach out to these guys. And in doing so, I will likely risk them churning because now I'm reminding them, oh, by the way, you're paying for this shit.
Right.
And you're just using it. But it would be more valuable to me to know why did they quit than it would be to take that, you know, $49 for the next 2 months.
So we have so I'll talk about Podcast Motor first, because we have had in almost 4 years a couple of customers that paid us for many, many months without using our service. And that is just bizarre. So we would send them a message, hey, you know, haven't gotten a podcast episode from you. Let's get going. We'd love to get this out for you soon. Blah, blah, blah. And just crickets. I don't understand, because I mean, even whatever, a couple of years ago, $300, $400, $500, $600, $800 a month is like not something you just forget. I don't care how big your business is, but well, I guess evidently if your business is so big.
That sound you just heard is my wallet's butt clenching.
Yeah. So
$800 a month. Oh
yeah. So we've definitely had that happen. And then I do feel like, wow, I personally send them a message. Hey, we need to get started. We have, you know, not gotten an episode from you in a couple of weeks. And there are people who go a couple of weeks and we check in and they're like, hey, yep, sorry. Life got in the way. No big deal. I'll send you something next week. Okay. They're, you know, alive and everything is good. But there are people who have been 6 months with us and we send them a message. They don't say anything. And I don't know what to do sometimes. We're pretty clear. This is a recurring billing thing every month and you get weekly episodes and blah, blah, blah. And so like, that's just kind of so much money. Then I do start feeling like, okay. And in a couple of cases, we've canceled their subscription after a few months because I'm just like, this is just too much. I know that like something is amiss. And so we canceled their subscription after a few months with them not using our services at all. A disclaimer, with all of our businesses, we send the default Stripe receipts every month. So these people do know that they're getting billed. There are many, many, many SaaS apps I use that I don't ever, ever, ever hear from. And I don't get email receipts. And I think that's wrong, because that is at least a way of touching base with some of these quote zombie customers, say, hey, you know, you're using us or you're paying us at least, you know, come back and re-engage with us. Even if it's like a negative re-engagement trigger or whatever, I think you owe it to your customers to send them a receipt. And it's built into Stripe.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, when I took over the Recapture account, I think theirs had been deactivated. So I turned it on so they specifically got those receipts every month.
Yeah. Yeah.
For that reason. Like I just can't bill somebody and not have them know I billed them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But dude, I think it's the majority of the things that I pay for, I don't get a receipt from. I get a receipt from Drip. I get a receipt from Laracast. I can't even think of other people that I get a receipt. I get a receipt from Clubhouse.
I get one from Help Scout.
I get one from Help Scout. Yep. But I mean, whatever, a handful out of 20 or so things I use. Anyways, so that's like the Podcast Motor story. With Castos, Yeah, I mean, it really often, very, very often comes down to like these people just don't ever get their podcast started or stop the podcast and don't create any content. And a part of what we do is kind of host their back catalog. So I expect there will be people throughout the life of the business that don't create new content, but pay us to host the files from their previous episodes. And from that respect, like a zombie customer is a little different with Castos than it would be with something that they would get like new value from every week. Like you and I publish, whatever, about every week. But if we stopped, we would still pay Castos to host all of our 143 episodes. So it's a little different with us, I think.
That's definitely different. It's more of passive value that comes from it, I guess.
But
And that's
I
harder to
do have a
detect.
mind in this respect towards like I want, but like for new people, I'm going to start a podcast, I'm going to get going, and they pay us for 3 months and they haven't published a single episode. I wish they would, and I do feel bad that they're not kind of going down the podcasting road. And I want to do as much as we can towards getting them engaged and keeping them engaged and having them create content and making it as easy as possible for them to do all that stuff. But in the end, if they don't, they know that they signed up for a recurring subscription thing. We send them a receipt. They get our newsletters. And I mean, as far as like feeling guilty about charging them for a service they don't quote use, I don't know what else we can do, I guess.
Like I was saying before, there's a limit to the guilt that I can associate with that because, like I said, if you're sending receipts and you're trying to engage with the customers and talk to them, and they're not talking back and they're not using your service and they're still paying you, I mean, is it really your fault at that point? I can't feel bad about it. If I've done everything that's within my control, and they're still doing whatever they're doing, then that is what it is, right?
For sure, for sure. So, yeah, I mean, Dave, as we're kind of talking through this, I think it is fairly application customer and like the value that they derive from your tool specific. So, as always, I think we would love to hear what other people do or how they think about inactive or zombie customers and what maybe what you've done to like reactivate them. That's kind of like the secret is like not just do you have them because everybody does, and do you feel guilty? Kind of, but you're probably going to continue the subscription anyhow. But like, how do you bring people back into the fold? And or what do you do with billing with kind of inactive customers? So I think that's another part of it. So yeah, shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com. And we have a different ask this week, so don't turn us off yet. But instead of leaving a review for us in iTunes, Dave and I ask that you share our podcast with a friend or a colleague or someone else crazy about startups and bootstrapping like you. Share the podcast with somebody else that you think might enjoy it, and that would really be cool and a way for us to kind of share our message with a few more people out there. So if you have a friend or a colleague or someone else on your team that you think might get something out of the show, we'd love if you could share the podcast with them and hopefully they love it. So thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.